You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Happy Blue Friday to all of our listeners. As promised, I'll be tackling your questions in an extended Locked On Seahawks mailbag. Make sure to check out the Locked On's Peacock and Williamson podcast every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering the latest news and insight in every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. For those wondering, though no move is imminent, Pete Carroll once again reiterated on Thursday that the door remains open for the Seahawks to still re-sign KJ Wright. At this point, I've got to wonder if there's actually a door even on the hinges at this point, given the lack of interest from teams in the veteran linebacker. It's honestly been one of the strangest, most surprising developments in the league this offseason, not just for the Seahawks. When you look at the fact that Wright remains unsigned, he went into free agency making it abundantly clear he was not going to take a hometown discount to return to the Seahawks. And why should he, when you consider how well he played last season? He earned another big-time contract, but that decision has ultimately been made for him, with other teams not showing much, if any, interest. And obviously the Seahawks haven't given him an offer that he's deemed worthy, because he would have signed if that was the case. You look back at the 2020 season, KJ Wright moved over to Sam linebacker in week 3 after Bruce Irvin suffered a torn ACL, and he was a bit reluctant about making the move, but KJ Wright is the ultimate team player, and he excelled playing more on the line of scrimmage as an overhang linebacker. He had 86 tackles, 2 sacks, 10 passes defensed, and an interception. He started all 16 games for the fifth time in his 10-year NFL career, and he concluded the season as the only player in the entire league that had double-digit tackles for loss and passes defense. That's one heck of a season for a veteran linebacker. Continues to play at a high level, and I will make the argument he was the most consistent defender on Seattle's defense. When you consider that they were one of the worst defenses we've ever seen the first 8 games of the season, KJ Wright was one of the few bright spots, and he continued to play well in the second half when the rest of the defense stepped up their game, and Seattle ended up being one of the top 5 defenses in the league over the final 2 months. Through it all, KJ Wright was the rock. He was the cornerstone that kept this defense together, played, I think, his best season. It didn't show that statistically. He's had years with more tackles. He's had seasons with more interceptions. But when you watch the film, he was just such a difference maker playing that Sam linebacker spot. And teams couldn't run their fly sweeps and their jet motions the way they did the season before, because you weren't going to fool KJ Wright on those plays. He was able to set the edge. It really was a major difference for this team playing in the trenches more. Instead of being an off-ball linebacker, the weak side spot like he had been his first 9 seasons, I think it negated some of his diminishing athleticism, and he was able to really play that position at a high level. But when you look at why he hasn't been signed, there are a few obvious reasons. He doesn't currently have a team. You got to think about the COVID-19 pandemic, the league-wide revenue crunch. When you don't have fans in the stands, they didn't have the money. So every team saw their salary cap plummet down to $182.5 million. KJ Wright's going to be 32 years old in July. And obviously away from the football field, that's not old. But on the football field with 10 years of experience, there's a lot of teams out there that clearly weren't interested in spending their limited cap space on an aging defender, and that includes the Seahawks. And I think the other thing that has hurt Wright is his position is also a factor. The league is shifting towards having more positionless players. They want smaller, more athletic hybrid linebackers that have safety backgrounds rather than traditional off-ball players. And that's because we're seeing offenses, the way that they are spreading things out, it's making life hard on those more traditional linebackers. And so you put all those factors together, I think that's why we see KJ Wright in the position that he's in. And looking at how this has unfolded, I can't help but feel sorry for him. He's coming off, as I said, arguably the best year of his 10-year career. He deserved to get paid one more time, but circumstances have prevented that from happening. Ultimately, he just hasn't received anything close to the offers that he believes he has rightfully earned. And like many other veterans that we see out there right now without a team, he's opted to continue waiting things out, and he hasn't walked through the door for less money. The Seahawks, on the other hand, they've started transitioning second-round pick from the 2020 draft, Daryl Taylor, to the Sam linebacker spot. He's going to give them an intriguing pass-rushing option, similar to what Bruce Irvin was playing that spot. The team may be content moving forward with him playing a similar role as a hybrid Sam linebacker and just moving on from Wright. But Carroll and John Schneider have made it clear that the door is still open. I expect that there will still be discussions between the two sides as we get closer to training camp. What's got to happen is Wright's got to decide that he's willing to play for a bit less. And in fact, I would say for significantly less than what he thought he was going to get in what he perceived as market value. This feels like a clear example where Seattle could revisit bringing him back shortly before camp. Maybe another team emerges with a bit more money to persuade him to sign. At the end of the day, though, both sides have to be able to reach an agreement here. I think the Seahawks would have interest in bringing him back, but at the same time, they've made it clear here with the money that they have, we're not going to be able to pay you anything close to what you believe and probably what they believe that he is worth at this point. And they do have some in-house options like Daryl Taylor that offer intrigue. And so we'll have to see what happens here. The fact that no other teams have really jumped up and been able to sign him, made an offer that has persuaded him to go there, it truly keeps the possibility of him staying in Seattle open. I just don't know at this point, with the team not making a move right now, I just don't know that we're going to see it happen. It's going to boil down to if any other suitors show up late and offer KJ Wright a contract. If that doesn't happen and he still wants to play, ultimately he's just going to have to sacrifice and play for significantly less than what he believes he's worth. It's the unfortunate situation that he and many other veterans are currently in. When I return in the second quarter, I'm going to tackle your questions. It's an extended Locked On Seahawks mailbag segment. Looking forward to tackling as many of your questions as I can over the final two quarters. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of the UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. As promised, it's time for an extended Locked On Seahawks mailbag segment. I'll be answering as many questions as I can for the remainder of this episode. Going to kick things off with a question here from Stephen Tilley. Do you think Shane Waldron's offense will clash too much with how Pete Carroll likes his games to usually flow, ultimately reverting back to a slower pace by season's end? Well, Stephen, I'm going to say this first as a caveat here. It's really tough for me to be able to answer this question right now because we're not really going to know whether or not this is going to be the case until we've had a chance to see what this offense is actually going to look like. We know very little about this scheme. If it's going to be similar to what Sean McVay runs the Rams, then we can obviously make certain inferences. There's going to be more wide zone runs. There's going to be more emphasis on the quick passing game. You're going to see a lot of different plays being ran out of a handful of formations. I don't know if all of that is going to hold true, though. When you see some of the personnel the Seahawks have retained, they've still got some bigger body guards that probably aren't necessarily built for running a lot of outside zone. So I expect there's going to be some merging of what Seattle has done in the past with what Shane Waldron's going to be implementing with his scheme. I do think Pete Carroll wants to see this offense play with better tempo. And I think what people get confused about, when I say playing with better tempo, I'm not saying that they're racing up to the line so they can snap as quickly as possible. I mean, This is not going to be one of those cases where the Seahawks are suddenly going to become a team that is trying to get 15 snaps in 2 minutes. Like, they're not going to be doing that. But what Pete Carroll wants to see from this offense, he wants to see them mix things up. Instead of having 25, 30 seconds in the huddle and getting up with like 5 seconds left in the play clock all the time. I think that's something that really bothered him last season, in particular with Brian Schottenheimer getting play calls in too late. Who knows how much Carroll fit into that, because there were times that he intervened, as we all know, in the playoff game. But I think that was something that frustrated him. And so Shane Waldron, that's going to be a central focus. And if you've watched the Rams offense, that's something they do really well. They mix up their tempos. They will be in the huddle for a couple plays, and then they'll speed things up, get up to the line. Then it can check out the defense. That doesn't mean that they're going to rush up and just snap it. It's going to give Russell Wilson a chance to be able to look over the defense, make his reads, call audibles if necessary. And I think there were a lot of times last year where he wasn't able to do that. So I think these two philosophies can coexist. You can still have tempo and still be able to control the football and wear defenses down. I don't expect this is going to be something that is necessarily going to be problematic. Pete Carroll's got to be able to stay hands off as much as possible and let Shane Waldron run the offense. We'll see if that actually happens or not. It's just tough to know right now without knowing what this scheme is truly going to look like to be able to answer that question, though. Moy tweets, do you think Seattle should go after Geno Atkins to solidify that defensive line? So about Geno Atkins, I was told way back in April that the Seahawks may have interest in Atkins, but that was not a move that I expected to happen at that stage. I didn't think that, given the fact he was coming off the worst year of his career, he had one tackle in 8 games played for the Bengals in 2020. I just didn't think teams were going to be rushing, lining up to sign him before the draft. And I haven't heard anything on that front since that point. I saw there were some rumors floating around on Twitter, none of them coming from notable reporters. I haven't heard anything about Atkins in regard to any teams, let alone the Seahawks, since mid-April. But looking at where he's at in his career right now, Geno Atkins has been one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL for more than a decade. He's 33 years old. As I mentioned, one tackle in 8 games. Last year was easily the worst year of his career. I just don't know how much he really has left in the tank at this point. It is worth noting he had 4.5 sacks in 2019. He had 10 sacks in 2018. And we did see Carlos Dunlap. He had a very diminished role before he got traded to the Seahawks last year, and he did not do much statistically for the Bengals. He was frustrated. You've got to wonder if Geno Atkins could have a similar rebirth coming out to Seattle. And those two love playing together. Maybe that would be all it would take for him to come out and still be able to provide some interior pass rush. They wouldn't need him to be the Geno Atkins of old. If he was able to step in and he was able to give them 15 snaps or so a game, and he still was able to get after quarterbacks a little bit, then I could see that being a solid signing at the right price. He's in a very similar situation to KJ Wright. But I mean, obviously, he's not coming off near the season that KJ Wright had, but the point is they're aging veterans that simply weren't going to be getting a lot of money thrown at them. And so they're just biding their time, waiting for the right opportunity. So I think it's possible that Seattle could decide to go down that route. It is worth noting that typically it seems like on an annual basis, they sign a veteran defensive tackle late in free agency, late in the offseason. Maybe Geno Atkins ends up being that next guy. I just don't know what you're going to get out of him, how much he has left. They do have a good track record of bringing in older defensive tackles and getting quality reps, quality play out of them. Maybe Atkins can be that next guy. Paul Martin tweets, do you think Richard Sherman would sign for $4 million? If he would you sign him and cut Trey Flowers and his $2+ million contract? So I will say this on Richard Sherman. I think it's possible that at this point, and this is again going off something I've mentioned several times in the show, players like KJ Wright and Geno Atkins and Richard Sherman that are now well into their 30s and they're not in the prime of their career anymore. Those type of players, more than ever before, were just bypassed in free agency. Teams were saving their money for younger players, and they were trying to axe a lot of the veterans that were already on their roster just to get to even on the salary cap. It just was an unfortunate year. You didn't want to be an older player looking for a job. Let's just put it that way. So Richard Sherman falls in the same boat as Atkins, really, because He only played in five games last year. Now, I've watched some of the film from those five games, and he still looked like an all-pro corner in those five games. But the fact of the matter is he's had some injury issues over the last 3 or 4 years. That was one of the reasons the Seahawks moved on from him with his Achilles injury, and he's had some trouble staying healthy. So I don't know what you can count on to get from him at this point, but I definitely think it's possible $4 million is the type of contract that he's going to have to settle for if he wants to play, because teams simply don't have money to spend. And I don't know that Seattle would necessarily need to cut Flowers. I think they have enough cap space right now that if they wanted to give Sherman a $4 million contract and he was willing to sign on that, they have the cap space to make it work. But at the same time, this would be a situation where you could save a little bit of money to maybe add a player to another position. With all the depth the Seahawks have now at corner, you could just swap those two out in your 90-man roster if they're really ready to move on from Trey Flowers. He could be a candidate in that case. So I think this is possible. I still think that there's a possibility that Sherman could come back to Seattle. I think it's a slim chance. I think the 49ers having him back is actually probably where I would be leaning right now, because San Francisco has a little more financial flexibility than they thought they were going to at this stage. So I think there's a good chance he goes back to San Francisco. There are a few other teams I could see coming up here soon that might be willing to give an offer that he would accept, but he's in the same spot as Wright and Atkins. He's biding his time, waiting things out for the right opportunity. Maybe that ends up being Seattle. We're just going to have to see what happens. Tony Bichetto tweets, do you see the Seahawks playing more nickel this season after playing so much base last year? It seems like the secondary is the deeper of the two position groups at this point. I think this is a tough one, because actually last year, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Seattle certainly played a bit more nickel than they did the season before, when they played like 58% of their snaps in base in 2019. It was really unique compared to the rest of the league, because most teams are playing nickel and dime packages for the most part, because teams are throwing the ball over the place. And so those are the schematic adjustments that have been made. But I felt like Seattle last year, they played Ugo Amadi quite a bit. Ryan Neal late in the season was playing in dime packages. It seemed like they were moving away from playing base defense as much. Again, I don't have all those numbers in front of me, but based on my tape study, it doesn't seem like they were doing it as frequently as they did in 2019, and they were playing more nickel. You're going to get Marquise Blair back. You still got Ugo Amadi there. What makes this difficult for me, though, is Daryl Taylor potentially being your Sam linebacker, because you look at what his biggest strength is, it's rushing the passer. He's a different type of Sam than what they've had. Bruce Irvin could have rushed the passer more than what he did. And I think you look back on it, the Seahawks probably wish they would have used him in that capacity a bit more early in his career, and they just didn't. But I think Daryl Taylor, especially with the bare fronts that they have been using with 2-3 techs, a nose tackle, and 2 overhanging 9 tech defenders, one of those being the Sam spot, if they're going to be playing a lot of those bare looks, Daryl Taylor's going to be in the lineup playing that Sam linebacker spot, rushing off the edge quite a bit, looking to get after quarterbacks. And I think the Seahawks are going to want to do that. Pete Carroll's made it clear that that's something they want to feature at that position. So you want to get him out there on the field. I could see them playing a bit more base than what they did last year. Not quite 2019 levels, but I could see them playing a bit more, having that hybrid Sam in there, especially in those bare fronts. Getting Blair back and having Amadi back, obviously, that allows them to have a lot of flexibility. As long as they can keep everybody healthy, they should be able to mix and match by opponent, and it's going to make them tougher to game plan for, because they're going to be able to do a lot of different things if they are able to deploy that personnel correctly. Tanya Bailey tweets, do you believe this is Russell's last year in Seattle? How about Bobby Wagner? I'm going to say no on both fronts. I think both players will be back in 2022. Russell Wilson, we could see some drama again next offseason. And I know there's plenty of media members out there that are convinced that he is on a one-year plan right now. I don't know that I am in that company, though. I still think Russell Wilson wants to be in Seattle. I think the moves that they made in this offseason ended up appeasing him. And they're going to have some cap space to work with next year, so they should be able to continue building around him. Of those two players, I would actually say Bobby Wagner's probably got the best chance to be gone, just because, you know, the difference between QB and linebackers, we're seeing quarterbacks playing late into their 30s, early 40s, and playing at a high level. Now, obviously, not everybody's doing what Tom Brady's doing, but we're seeing a lot of really good quarterbacks play well into their 30s, into their late 30s. Linebacker is a different story, especially when you look at what Bobby Wagner's game is predicated on. It's predicated on athleticism and his instincts. As he continues to slow down and he starts to lose a step or two, the Seahawks are going to be faced with a bit of a conundrum there if his performance starts to drop off a little bit, because that's not the type of player that's just suddenly going to rediscover his speed at the age of 33 or 34. And so Seattle will have to consider that. But I think both these guys will be on the roster next year. They're so important in the clubhouse. They're so important on the field, great leaders. And they're still, both of them, such great players. And I don't see Bobby Wagner being the type of player that's going to just fall flat in 2021 to the point where it's time to move on. I expect that both these guys will be out there. Now, after 2022, that's a different story, especially if the team doesn't win a bunch of games, they don't advance further in the playoffs. That's going to impact Russell Wilson, because once he gets closer to being 35 years old, he's going to see himself maybe in a mid-career crisis, so to speak, where he's looking for a better opportunity. And with what we saw this offseason, it's certainly possible. So the way this year plays out is going to have a strong bearing on the status of both players for different reasons. Shahir tweets, how good is our cornerback depth currently relative to the last 3 years, and how much impact does this have on our current defense? I think the top of the depth chart right now is a bit more questionable than it has been for a while, without Shaquille Griffin. And I don't know that he necessarily met my expectations. He was a Pro Bowler in 2019. I thought he was maybe going to progress a bit more than what he did in his four seasons with the Seahawks, but losing him is a significant loss. Akella Witherspoon has been inconsistent. He has battled injuries in San Francisco. Now, you watch the last three games last season, and you see a corner that you're pretty excited about. You look at some games early in the year, and you start to wonder, why is that guy on an NFL roster? He's been very up and down with his play. He's got the length. He's got the size, the athleticism. He's a smart player. So he's got all the tools to be successful in Seattle, but you don't know what you're going to get from him. DJ Reed's got to show that his second half last year wasn't a fluke, and I think that he will. I mean, I think his play is something that's going to carry over into 2021. I'm very confident that DJ Reed is going to be one of the starters, and probably Akella Witherspoon will be the guy across from him. Pierre Desir's really struggled the last 2 years after breaking out with the Colts a few years ago. Who knows what you're going to get out of him? This is a good scheme fit for him coming back to Seattle's defense. Trey Brown's a fourth-round rookie. We don't know how he's going to fit in right off the bat. There's been some encouraging things I've seen from him at their OTAs and the rookie minicamp, but there's only so much you can glean from those practice sessions without tackling and not having the contact you're normally going to have in a training camp practice. We don't really know where he fits in until August. And Trey Flowers, another player that has had moments, he's flashed. He started a lot of games for Seattle, but he has not progressed as much as I thought he was going to, especially given how well he played as a rookie, converting from safety to cornerback. I thought for sure that the kid was really going to turn the corner over the last couple of years, and it just hasn't really happened. So we'll see what their plans are with him. He's going to be in the mix there. I love the slot corners that they have with Marquise Blair and Ugo Amadi. Those two complement each other well. It gives the Seahawks two players they can mix and match against different types of opponents and different types of game situations. Again, a lot of flexibility for Ken Norton Jr. So I think the depth is better overall at the corner position. I do have some questions about the top of the depth chart, though, in terms of talent and who's going to end up emerging as those two starters. Maybe Richard Sherman gets thrown into the mix here, too. Certainly some questions left to answer there when they get into training camp. Coming up in the third quarter, I'm going to continue tackling your questions in an extended Locked On Seahawks mailbag. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar. 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health-conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Blue Friday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Continuing our extended Friday Locked On Seahawks mailbag, we got a question here from Ugly Cat Joe tweets, who do you think will return kicks in week one? This is going to be a wide open competition. I thought DJ Reed did a nice job last year in the second half when they had him returning kicks. Unfortunately, botched that punt and fumbled away in the playoff game that proved to be costly in the fourth quarter. But he really did a nice job adding some explosiveness to that return game. It allowed them to move away from Tyler Lockett in that capacity. My favorite right now is their second round pick out of Western Michigan. I think Dwayne Eskridge, with his track speed, he is a dynamic kick returner. He's explosive, great burst, acceleration, really good vision on special teams. He's your number three receiver. He's going to get plenty of run on offense too, but this is a way that you can get him more involved as a rookie and really make your special teams a lot more dangerous. I think Eskridge is the favorite. Freddie Swain is a guy that showed some things in training camp last year. He might be in the mix here as well. And they got a couple of other players that were signed in the undrafted ranks. Connor Weddington out of Stanford is a really good special teams player. That might be the key for him to potentially sneak onto the 53-man roster. So you need to watch for him. Kate Johnson's returned some kicks in the past too. So they got a number of guys that I think are capable of doing it. To me, Dwayne Eskridge is the favorite, though, in week one to be returning kickoffs. Ryan Steger tweets, are the Seahawks still considering bringing in a running back like Todd Gurley? I know they were interested in Gio Bernard. Yes, they were interested in Gio Bernard, and that kind of caught me off guard when that report surfaced, but I was able to call around and confirm the Seahawks did indeed make an offer to Bernard, which you look at the roster that they've currently got. They have a couple players that are pretty solid third down options in DJ Dallas and Travis Homer. They got a couple undrafted rookies in Josh Johnson and BJ Emmons, who might have some potential playing a role like that as well. So I would be surprised. I was surprised they were looking at Bernard. So maybe they might still kick the tires on somebody, but I'd be really surprised if they're looking much at backs at this point, especially someone like Todd Gurley. The Lions have been taking a look at him. I expect he will sign with someone in the near future, but I don't think the Seahawks are going to have any interest at this point in him. I think when you look at the depth chart, Chris Carson's coming back as your starter. Rashad Penny, more than a year removed from his knee injury. They're hoping he can stay healthy this year. Dallas and Homer, they're hoping those two can improve after getting their feet wet the last couple of seasons with some spot starts. Both are good special teams guys. Alex Collins played well in three games a year ago. And those two undrafted rookies, I think especially Josh Johnson, the kid out of Louisiana Monroe, I think he's got an opportunity to make a splash in training camp. And if he's able to do that, don't count him out from being able to steal a roster spot from one of the returning players. It's definitely possible that could happen. So I just don't know that they need to add any more players at that position group. I think they've got a really nice set of seven players there going into camp. Marcus tweets, what is your issue with people buying Tim Tebow jerseys? It's their choice to spend their money how they see fit, and he's a celebrity, so why knock them? Well, you're correct on that, and I'm sure you're basing this off of what I said on social media today. It doesn't make sense to me why anybody would spend the money that it costs to buy a jersey, to buy an NFL.com jersey of a player that has been out of the league for 8 years. And to be honest, I have great respect for what Tim Tebow did in Florida. I thought he was one of the best college players I've ever seen, but I never thought that he was going to be much of an NFL player, and I was surprised that a team drafted him in the first round, and that ended up not working out for the Broncos. They did win a playoff game with him at quarterback, and he had that touchdown in overtime against the Pittsburgh Steelers. That was the one big shining moment of his career. He's a great leader. I understand all of that, but I thought his best chance of being able to make in the league when he first entered the NFL was moving to tight end, and he wasn't willing to do that. And he wasn't willing to do it when he went to the Jets. He wasn't willing to do it when he was with the Eagles. Then he was out of the league. He tried to play minor league baseball. I admire him for continuing to go. I just, 8 years away from the NFL, I just can't see him being able to go out there and do anything. And maybe he'll prove me wrong. I just think, you know, there's a lot of players on the Jacksonville Jaguars I'd be excited about, new guys like Trevor Lawrence, for example. Those would be the type of jerseys I would be buying. But Tim Tebow's just got a really large fan base. He's got very supportive fans that have followed him since his time at Florida. I'm not surprised at all that a bunch of fans are buying his jersey. It just doesn't make sense to me when you consider he hasn't played in so long. C. McCrowney tweets, what's the percentage chance the Seahawks trade for Julio Jones? Yes, I realize it's low, but I want a number. To be honest, if I could give a negative percentage chance, that is what I would do. It's not happening. So I'm just going to say zero, flat out zero. Drafting Dwayne Eskridge, you've got DK Metcalf. You just gave a huge extension to Tyler Lockett. There's no reason for the Seahawks to trade away top draft picks to bring in Julio Jones. Now, if you want to do it on Madden, be my guest. On Madden, opposing defenses are not going to be able to cover Julio Jones, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, and if you still have Dwayne Eskridge. I mean, you might have to consider including Eskridge in the deal to give the Falcons a receiver in return. It's not going to happen. Last question here from Marshall tweets, John Schneider has not been afraid to trade picks away for proven players. Are there any stars on other teams you could see him trying to snag after the June 2nd deadline? So, again, Julio Jones, we're just going to throw that name out of the way into the garbage can because they are not going to be trying to get Julio Jones. As much as I'm sure John Schneider would love to be able to bring in another big-time talent like that, they don't need him. But I'm going to go to New England, and I've seen a few articles floating around about this the last couple of days. Stephon Gilmore, he's 31, so he's getting to be a little older corner. He wasn't as good last year as he was in 2019 when he was the defensive player of the year. But I look at Seattle's cornerback group, and I mentioned this earlier. I like the depth they have. I have questions about the players at the top, though. I feel like maybe they could still upgrade their starting cornerbacks. They would absolutely do that if they traded for Stephon Gilmore, and he's affordable. Last year of his contract, $7 million against the cap. So he's affordable for a player of his caliber. And I don't know what you would have to necessarily give up for him, but with only 1 year left in his deal, if I'm the Seahawks, I'm saying, hey, would you be interested in taking a fourth round pick? I don't think I would go any higher than a third, and that would be pushing it. I might ask back for a late, like a sixth or seventh round pick in addition with Gilmore, because I'm not giving up more than that for a player that is potentially a 1 year rental. But this is a team that is in win now mode. Gilmore is a physical player with great ball skills. He has been one of the better corners in the league for several years running. So he was not a 1 year wonder. 2019 was his best season, but this is a guy that played really well. Start of his career in Buffalo. He's been great ever since the Patriots got him. He is a shutdown corner. He would instantly upgrade that secondary. I doubt that it happens, but that would be the one player that's out there that maybe could get moved because of his contract situation and the fact that the Patriots spent a lot of money this offseason. They might want to create a little bit of cap space. I could see that happening. The Patriots and Seahawks have made some trades in the past. That would be the one player that would stand out. I'm not predicting it. I don't think it happens, but it's certainly a trade that would intrigue me. That would be a player I would be willing to give up a draft pick for to bring him in and help out my secondary. If you've got Stephon Gilmore, Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and either DJ Reed and Akella Witherspoon at the other corner spot, that is suddenly looking like a very formidable secondary in the NFC West, which you need when you consider the talent the other three teams have at the wide receiver position. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. It's hosted by Peter Bukowski as he updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. We will be off for Memorial Day on Monday, but Rob Rang and I will return for Throwback Tuesday and continue our position-by-position overview with offensive tackles. Enjoy your 3-day weekend. Go Hawks.